Welcome to Disruptive Adventism. My name is Jose Briones, and I'll be your host for this podcast. This podcast is about discussing the polemical statements and practices that are part of the Adventist fabric, which in turn shape this belief system to be unique and relevant for today's society. During our podcast today, we sit down with another veteran to discuss the topic of military service and Adventism. We hope that you have been enjoying our Law and Order series and hope that you share it with others. With nothing else to say, let us begin. Welcome back, everybody. Today we have part two, as I said in the introduction, on our topic of the military. So we have another veteran with us talking about a little bit of the same topic that we talked in the last podcast. We have Jacques. Jacques, how's it going?
Everything's going great, Jose. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's our pleasure, you know, to have you here. It's our second interview with a veteran. So tell us a little bit about your service, you know, and what are some of the things that you did in the military?
Okay, so I went into the military November 11th, 2011, served as an infantryman, airborne unit as well. I was airborne qualified, did that for 3.5 years. I was trained in different weapon systems, M250 cal. I was a grenadier for some time. I was a rifleman. I was a machine gunner. Actually, interesting, when I decided to go into ministry in the little interim while I was still in the military, but I was going towards ministry, people in my squad would call me the machine gun preacher because I was a machine gunner during the week, but I was preaching on the weekends.
So. Interesting. How was that relationship, if you don't mind me asking, like with your squad, maybe? What was it? What's the proper term?
Yeah, like people in my squad or people in my platoon.
Platoon, yes. That's the word I was missing. So in your platoon, you have this kind of like you were kind of struggling deciding to go into ministry or, you know, stay around. How did you manage that? What was the thing that clicked for you?
So I will definitely say that I didn't always manage that tension well. And at one point, I actually decided to just get up and leave. Mm-hmm. And I just got in my car and I drove off base. And I was like, I'm not coming back. That's what we call in the military, AWOL, absent without leave. But I definitely came back after a weekend. And I was able to go through the process of becoming a conscientious objector, which is just basically saying that or trying to make a case that your religious beliefs do not fall in line per se with your specific job in the military at that time. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to do that.
So we talked a little bit about conscientious objector and conscientious cooperating in the previous podcast with Floyd. And we kind of understand that this is this idea that you're able to kind of not carry a gun or like not kill, not go into the military section, the section of the
combat
army.
Arms.
Combat, there you go. That takes away life. Mm-hmm. So you're able to serve in other areas, relief, or maybe in the mechanic, or, you know, different areas that do not engage in combat. So you wanted to get conscientious objector. Now, this is after you have been trained.
Yes.
Right? After you have allowed a period of time to go into the military. Mm-hmm. So why did you choose that? Why did you want to become a conscientious objector? What was it that prompted you to do that?
So when I went into the military in the first place, we kind of have to go back into the past to understand the present, going into the future. When I went into the military, I had just left Southern Adventist University, and I was kind of looking for direction. I was kind of looking for purpose, and I knew that the military would be a good place only because I had friends that were in the military and had seen the structure and the discipline and being part of something, and I'd seen what being part of something that's bigger than oneself did. Granted, I could have, it's sad to say that I could not get those things from the church. Mm. And so I went into the military in that mind frame. Fast forward about a year and a half, 2 years into my service, that's when I have my come to Jesus moment. And that's when I decided to start taking my relationship with God seriously. And I didn't immediately say, all right, now that I have a relationship with God, I want to be out of the military. Because I don't necessarily believe that military service and Christianity are mutually exclusive. Mm. There were a lot of people that I served with that are now out, or people that are still in, great Christian people, loving fathers, loving church members that choose to serve their country. And I believe that there's nothing wrong with that. But I felt God calling me out for a specific purpose. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what at the time, because now I'm in the seminary. Now I know that God has called me to public ministry. But at the time when I felt God's prompting to call me out, I didn't really know where God was going to lead. I didn't know whether he wanted me to do full-time ministry in a pastoral sense, or whether he just wanted me to be a faithful doctor or a faithful engineer or a faithful lawyer, so to speak. And so I haven't always managed the tension well, but looking back on it, I see that I could have potentially chosen to go the route of becoming a conscientious objector and picking another job in the military where I didn't have to carry a weapon. But I feel like God was calling me just to be out. So that's what I did.
Okay, so you decided to kind of try to achieve conscientious objector, but then decided to just remove yourself from the military service.
Because there, okay, so let me, I'm not sure how it is in the Marines, but I know in the Army, there's two types of conscientious objectors. Okay. You have the type where I'm in combat arms. I no longer want to be in combat arms. So I'll go be a medic, or I'll be a parachute rigger, or I'll go like do something outside of combat arms where my job does not involve the taking of life. Mm-hmm. Or you can decide I want to be a conscientious objector and get out of the military altogether. And so when I was doing my application, I decided to go for the packet that said, you know what, if my packet is approved, I want to be separated from the military.
Okay. Was it hard to achieve that, to get through that? I remember talking with Floyd a little bit, and he was explaining, you know, the different ideas, and it's kind of like once you go in and you kind of go through the training, it's a little bit harder than if you register before. Is that a true thing? I want to kind of get like a ratifying maybe from you.
Yeah, it was difficult on multiple fronts. So it was difficult from the legal perspective, mm-hmm. because filling out one of these packets, it's not simple. It's complicated. All this paperwork that needs to be done, statements of integrity, so to speak, case officer almost has to, like a case officer, so to speak, has to be assigned to your packet. I had people that were interviewing my roommates.
Wow.
To see if, you know, is this person really living the life they claim to be living in their application to leave the military? They had to interview my squad leader, members of my platoon. On top of that, I had to interview with the chaplain. I had to see the members of JAG, which are the military lawyers. My packet had to be submitted to a convening board in Virginia. So it was a lot, to the point when I went down to the military office at the beginning of the process and I asked the captain there, I said, okay, so I'm starting this process. How long will it take before I find out whether or not I'm in or out? And he said, to be perfectly honest, I don't know.
Wow.
Because I've never seen one go through successfully.
Wow.
And so from that perspective, it was difficult. But then from another perspective, I'm now dealing with the people in my platoon. Mm. And many people felt that I was, when I told them why I was trying to get out personally, they felt like I was attacking them. And I was saying that, you know, God doesn't like what you do. And then especially like the other Christians in my unit also felt some type of way, because they're like, okay, so do you think you're better than us? Mm-hmm. Do you think that your Christianity is superior? And I had to explain, listen, this is my faith walk. I'm not saying that God wants you to be out of the military. I'm not saying God wants you to be in. All I know is what God is calling me to do. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I kind of had to juggle those two things.
There's emotional components, legal components. It's a little bit, I perceive it's difficult.
Yeah.
It was a difficult time. No. Now, how do you arrive to that conclusion? How do you arrive to the point where you say, hey, I think that the Bible, or I think that my personal conviction and God is calling me to do that. What did you evaluate? Maybe that's what I'm trying to ask. What were some of the sources that you were kind of considering that led you to that decision?
So I'd say I reached a point in my walk with God where trying to observe the Sabbath based off what my interpretation was at the time. Mm-hmm. While serving in the military became very difficult. Mm-hmm. And so instead of trying to kind of juggle these two things, I kind of felt God saying, you know what, maybe it's best for you just to separate yourself. Also, on top of that, I heard a sermon by someone, I forgot his name actually, who used to be in the military, and he wrote a book on why he decided to leave the military and how he became a conscientious objector. And so I read that book, I prayed on it, and I felt God saying, you know what, this is the next stage. Granted, I said my understanding at that time, because my understanding of the Sabbath and what it means to keep the Sabbath has since grown, of course, since studying theology, undergrad, and now being here at the seminary. But my understanding of Sabbath keeping at that time was one that, okay, my military service and Sabbath keeping at that point in my mind were not really compatible.
So it was a certain degree, a little bit of the Sabbath. Mm. Were there other elements? We spoke with Floyd a little bit of like, okay, so what is the place for the military and Adventism? Were there conflicts for you in that area? You said that they're not mutually exclusive, but how do they relate? How do they interact in your view?
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember when I was at Oakwood, there was a pastor came to preach for AY, and I worked in the Office of Spiritual Life at the time. And we started talking, and he kind of asked me about my journey a little bit. And I recognized him because he had preached a sermon here at Andrews like 7 years before. I said, are you the person that preached that sermon? I think the sermon was called Learning How to Fly. He's like, yeah, like, how do you even remember that? Blah, blah. So we started going. He's like, so what have you been doing since then? Because I preached that sermon like 8 years ago, and you're still at Oakwood. Like, so have you been in school the whole time? I'm like, no, I have not been in school for 8 years. Praise God. I told him about my time in the military, and he said, oh, you were in the military in your 20s. You're not clean.
Whoa.
And he wasn't saying that in a judgmental way, like unclean, unclean, like I was some type of leper. But he was saying, I know you have a past.
Mm.
Because the military, it's like college on steroids.
Okay.
Because, you know, college campuses, a lot of stuff happens because you have a whole bunch of people in their physical prime and a lot of hormones and all these different things. You have men and women in the same place. But I say that the Army is college on steroids because in college, most people are broke. They're okay. Paying to be there.
Yes.
In the military, it's reversed. I'm being paid to be there.
Mm.
So we have money.
We can do whatever you
want. So we could do whatever we want. So you have a whole bunch of, just use your sanctified imagination. You have a whole bunch of 20-something-year-old men.
In their prime.
In their prime with thousands of dollars in their pocket. Going out into army towns and
doing different things.
Doing different things, yeah. Right. And so that's one dimension of what it means to be a Christian in the military. You have to know that the culture thereof, it's kind of one of like a frat house, basically. Okay. But at the same time, I don't say that the culture of the military would preclude you from joining, because Daniel was faithful in Babylon. Like at some point, no matter what the people around you are doing, you're going to have to choose to be faithful.
Mm-hmm.
And I've even spoken to some pastors that are like, even in ministry, there's some pastors that will just openly do stuff with women that are not their wives, and they'll just talk about it. And you have to choose, will I associate myself with people that are just openly committing adultery, or will I associate myself with people that are trying to do their best to stay faithful? So I've learned that wherever you go, you're going to have to choose who you want to be there. There's no environment that can make you holy. And so I'd say, even though the Army has that type of culture, I still would say that if God is calling you to in the military to be a chaplain, then you should definitely go. Or if he's calling you to do something else.
Mm-hmm. As you started to speak with this person, and they were saying like, you're not clean, you know, like they kind of had this image in their minds. And how did you then, you know, as you're growing and your understanding of Adventism and the military, where are you standing today? You're hearing like the different comments, the different ideas. How is that relationship now in your mind cemented? Are Adventists called? You said that, hey, if you want to go as a chaplain, that's a great thing. But should we consider it strongly? Should we not consider it strongly? What are some of the pros, cons in this conversation?
So initially, when I started the process of leaving the military, I was diametrically opposed to Adventist serving in the military. But I'd say as I've grown in my understanding of God and how he uses different situations and how he works with us where we are, I would definitely say that I believe that the military is a good place. Because when I just look back on my own experience, there are so many experiences that I had during those 3.5 years that have shaped me into the person that I am now. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the experiences I had with Drill Sergeant Lee, Drill Sergeant Merriman, and Drill Sergeant Cortez, they actually helped me get through Oakwood and graduate with honors. Mm. So
what I hear you say is that there's this element of discipline that you learn there. I mean, that's something that we talked about in the previous podcast as well. Mm-hmm. There's some positive aspects of the military.
Of course.
You know, at the beginning, you say you were opposed. Mm-hmm. And now you're more like, continue. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
And then on top of that, you have the education benefits. Mm-hmm. You have the education benefits. You have the VA insurance. I'm fully insured for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still getting education benefits now. I've been out in the military for years. And God has continued to use my time in the military to be a wedge, to kind of reach different people, to kind of connect with young adults, to connect with young men that are looking for the next stage in their, like looking for advice as to what to do for the next stage in their life. And so I'd say the military, it's just like any other job. I know some people say, well, you know, you sign a contract and you can't leave for a certain amount of time and the military owns you, because technically when you join the military, you are like property of the United States government.
Wow.
Yeah. Like there's actually a story of someone who was out in the sun. He belonged to the class of the less melanated of us. And he was out in the sun and he got sunburned. And if you get sunburned in the military, technically you can be charged with destruction of government property.
That is... Yeah. Interesting. I did not know that.
Technically, you can. Yeah. So you literally are government property for the time that you're serving. And people say, well, you know, you have to be there for 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, whatever. But then when I look at the average civilian, they stay at the same job for 3 years, 5 years. There are people that were here at Andrews when I was first here in 2008. And I walk around the campus and you're still here and you have the same position. So I'm like, so you have the freedom to move, but you're not. And so all of the negatives that I could say about the military, they really apply to the private sector as well. Mm-hmm. I think we tend to be a little bit more critical of the military because of what we see on TV and, oh, you know, you're going to be brainwashed. But the average Apple user, and I am an Apple user, the average Apple user is brainwashed. Like the new iPhone XS just came out and everyone with the X is like, this isn't good enough. I need the new one. It's just like... So a lot of the components that people would say are negative about the military, they don't just apply to the military. They apply to society as a whole. Mm-hmm.
Interesting that you mentioned that, because in my mind, as I'm thinking, like, you know, I'm just thinking like the relationship. I had one interview already with Floyd and now having your interview with you, mm-hmm. It's kind of like, man, there's a lot of new information. There's a lot of kind of similar narratives that you guys kind of flow. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, like you make it seem, and I am starting to agree with you. I'm starting to kind of shape a little bit of my position that, hey, you know, this can be a good opportunity for you, mm-hmm. if you decide to do it with integrity. Like, yeah. You know, and Floyd talked about being spiritually ready. You know, he said like, if you're not spiritually ready to go into the military, please don't go. That's not a good thing for you. And we talked a little bit about of what happens, you know, with somebody that's kind of hesitating, you know. So I kind of want to ask you a similar question. Like, you know, we have a listener maybe or two that's listening again to our another podcast, part two, you know, when it comes to the military service. And maybe they're still on the fence, you know, and they heard Floyd, but maybe give me a different perspective. I mean, Floyd went into the Marines. You went into the Army. There's some things that kind of happen in both branches, but... What's your recommendation for somebody that's kind of on the verge, you know, like now that you have shaped, you have grown out of it, you have gone through different phases of it's negative, it's positive, it's neutral, it's what you make it. So how will you, yeah.
So for a listener who's debating whether or not to go into the military, I would tell them, one, to check your motives. Why do you want to join the military? I'd say that doing some soul searching would definitely be in order. Secondly, I would say after doing soul searching, don't overthink it. Joining the military is not a lifelong commitment. You can go to a recruiting station, I don't know what the contracts are looking like these days, but let me do 3, 3.5. Let me do 4. Let me do 5. I know for a fact that it will be a life-changing experience. You won't be the same person when you come out as you were then you went in. And I'd say, and I don't want to, I'm trying to choose my words carefully, but I'd say there are, I think that a lot more people need to go into the military than do.
Okay.
Only because there are certain skills that society used to teach that society doesn't teach anymore. So the average millennial feels entitled. They feel like they don't have a real hard, really strong work ethic. You know, the average kid, you know, comes to college, $20,000 in student loans a year, 30, 40, not going to class, failing out of classes, and they're just kind of lost, looking for purpose, and they choose to go to school when I believe that someone in that state, if you feel called to go to the military, you may as well go to the military and kind of figure yourself out and get some discipline, get some structure, get some order, because these are the things that are going to get you through life. And then when you're ready, then come to school. Because my first stint in school, I spent 2 years at Andrews, 1 year at Southern. Andrews, I only failed one class. At Southern, I failed every class but one.
Wow.
I got kicked out of Southern with a 0.46 GPA. Then I go into the military, kind of get some structure, get some discipline, and I actually found God, or God found me while I was there. He didn't find me at Andrews, the flagship of Adventist education. He didn't find me at Southern, which is another SDA school. He literally found me in a place where you would think that he wouldn't be able to find me. Mm-hmm. And so it was after the military and all those experiences that I came out with a purpose, knowing what I wanted to do, and I was able to get a 3.98 GPA my first semester. I was able to graduate Alpha Chi, all these different honor societies, all these different scholarships just flowing my way. And so I'd say if you're hesitating and you're like, I don't really know what I want to do, I'd say go. I'd say go, because God will definitely use that. And if you allow him, and if you stay connected with him, and you don't let the distractions kind of pull you to the left or pull you to the right, if you stay connected with God, the military will be a huge blessing.
What I hear from you is very relevant, I think, and a little bit of a change as well, because what you're saying is that, hey, go, but be rooted. Like, you know, make sure that you know what you're going, that you're going to learn some good things, but also know that it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
And it's going to...
It's a frat house.
Yeah. But know that you can still minister at there. But don't go if you're just trying to go have fun to a certain degree. Like, I mean, if that's your purpose, that's your purpose. But at the end of the day, like, if you're trying to be committed, if you're trying to find God, you know, and you're still not, still a little bit shaky, what I hear as well from you is that, hey, go and maybe find God first, like, you know, before you can enter into the temptations that you can encounter at the frat house, per se.
Yeah, that is a possibility. But when I compare, one of my favorite chapters in the Bible is Luke 15, the story of the prodigal son. And when I preach that sermon, I always tell the church that there are two prodigal sons. There's a prodigal who left and there's a prodigal who stayed. You know, because both of them didn't understand the character of the father. And one son, the one who stayed, God was able to, at the end of the story, we see that, you know, the father's out with him, talking with him. Hey, you know, you should come into the party. You know, everything I have is yours. I don't understand why you're upset that I, you know, that I killed the fatted calf for your brother, blah, blah, blah. Like, you've had me this whole time. Why is it not good enough? God was speaking with him and reaching him while he was still at home. While the prodigal who left, he had to go away to a faraway place, like outside of his father's presence, so to speak. And it was in the pig pen that he came to himself. And so I think people have different experiences with God. Right. Some people will find God in a familiar setting. They'll have the testimony, I was going to church my whole life. I was doing things the right way. I waited till marriage, but I never had a relationship with God. And one evangelistic series, I decided, you know what? I'm going to take my relationship with God seriously. And now they're committed. While someone else might have the experience of, why would I be someplace where I'm not really connected to God? So let me just leave. And so I think that in the church, we need to make room for people with, like, have both experiences. Because both of them are valid.
Yes, yes. it's very interesting that you mentioned that as I continue reflecting, because it's very important. I mean, God can reach you. Be open. Maybe that's a good message to like take home. Like, you know, be open to God and like know that, hey, search him, you know, regardless of wherever you go. Something that you mentioned too, and I think this is kind of my comment into what I heard that really hurts, but at the same time, it's like, you know what? We need to do better, is when you said the skills that we don't learn in society anymore and how we as a church could do those things. Mm-hmm. You know, we could serve.
We could.
To not let the youth or the people that need these skills to just, you know, look somewhere else. Like, you know, like you said, at first you were kind of, you're hurt that you can't find these things in the church and you had to go somewhere else to find those things. And I think that's a challenge that you're bringing.
It is.
That the military and maybe other places in society are doing a better job at training people, are disciplining people, are helping people than we're doing ourselves. And that is, as the podcast says, is very disruptive because it challenges us to think more and to help others to gain those skills. Thanks a bunch. This conversation has been great. I appreciate it. You have bring a lot of thoughts, kind of like a confirmation of the conscientious objector idea, you know, that Floyd kind of left us with, you know, if you believe in that and you go into the military, try to get the status as soon as possible, because it's going to be a little bit harder. Before we tune out, though, I want to give you the final word. That's something that we do to our guests. What should we take home when it comes to Adventism and the military?
Before I give my concluding remarks, I just was just thinking of something. For any parents who have children who might be thinking about going to the military, I would highly suggest that you pray about it before just giving this, no, I don't want you to go. There's a saying that the closer you are to danger, the farther you are from harm. Sometimes, and I can only imagine, I'm not a parent. Sometimes we want to keep our kids away from harm so badly that we wouldn't mind killing them softly at home than them potentially having a shot leaving. And so going back to Luke 15, I truly believe that if that son had not left, he might have just died at home. And his father would have never recognized it because he didn't leave. So to the parents, I'd say definitely if you have a child who wants to go to the military, definitely pray on it and allow God to kind of work on your heart to see whether or not that's best for where they are at that time. And my concluding remarks, I'd just say, you know what, with Adventism in the military, just like with all things, it comes down to your own personal convictions and your own personal walk with God. God was able to use Moses. Moses grew up in Egypt. In Egypt, he learned military history. He learned all these different things. In one of my sanctuary classes, we're actually seeing that the way that the Egyptian army was structured is the same way that the 12 tribes were structured around the sanctuary. And so God was able to use what he learned in Egypt to make him a better leader for his people. And so if you feel God is calling you to the military, or if it's just like a burden on your heart, I'd say definitely pray on it, seek his face, and know that whatever you learn there, if you stay connected with him, he can use it in the future to better you and to make you who he's called you to be.
That was our conversation on military service with Jacques Laguerre. We hope that these two interviews have helped you to gain a well-rounded perspective when it comes to the interaction between Adventism and the military. Continue to tune in as we develop our Law and Order series. Thank you for listening today. We appreciate that you have taken the time to listen to our podcast and ask that you share it with others. Please leave a review on iTunes or your favorite podcatching app. If you're enjoying our content, we want to invite you to consider contributing to our cause by becoming a patron, where you will receive exclusive content, have the ability to sit down with the Disruptive Adventism team and ask relevant questions for Adventism and society. If you're interested in contributing, head to patreon.com/disruptiveadventism. Another avenue for contribution is to purchase our merchandise through Amazon or tpublic.com. You can find the links to our merchandise on our Facebook or Instagram pages. We also hope that our content has intrigued you a little bit and that you decide to stay around for future podcasts. If you have any comments, feedback, or a topic you would like us to discuss, please go to our website at www.disruptiveadventism.org or shoot us an email to disruptiveadventism@gmail.com. We're eager to engage in discussions about any matter, so don't hesitate to contact us. This has been it for today. We hope you join us next time. And as always, we invite you to be disruptive.